Hi, Rich. Welcome to the show. What did you listen to growing up, and when did you first discover jazz?
So growing up, I probably mostly listened initially to what was on the radio in Portland, Oregon, which is where I grew up. And that music was really a conglomeration of many different styles. Radio stations were not as segregated stylistically as they are now. And so the radio stations in Portland would have included rock and roll, rhythm and blues, country western, some big band tunes, maybe even a little bit of popular Latin music and so on. So basically, I listened to a cross section of the popular music of the day. We didn't really have a record player until I was about 15, at least not one that was much good. I do remember when I was very small, we had some kind of a really kind of marginal record player. My mother had a few classical records that she would put on, but other than that, I didn't get a record player till I was 15. And at that point, we started getting a few records, and I started to buy a few jazz records. And so, really, at the time I started doing a lot of music listening, was also the time that I started listening to jazz. And early on, I had records from Sonny Rollins, Jerry Mulligan, and let's see, I had an Eddie Harris record early. It wasn't long before I was listening to Charlie Parker, John Coltrane, Ornette Coleman, and so on. So that was all when I was, by the time I was probably 15 or 16. And actually, I started playing the tenor saxophone when I was about 15. I originally started as a clarinet player in the band in elementary school. That's kind of what fell to me by default. They handed me a metal clarinet and said, "Here, play this." So that's how I got started. And then I thought that it would be cool to play tenor saxophone. So I got a tenor sax. And actually, maybe one of the reasons for that, when I think back, I believe I did take some lessons on the clarinet. And I believe my teacher said, "Well, lots of people have altos. There's a bit fewer people with tenors. Might be a good instrument to play." I don't know if that made any sense, but at any rate, that's the horn I started on, and the horn I still play primarily.
Do you remember what your first horn was that you played?
My first horn was an old Conn, probably made in the 50s, I'm guessing, or possibly the late 40s. Not a bad horn, but when I got to be in my late teens, I was able to get a Summer Mark VI. And I've been playing Summer Mark VIs ever since, basically.
So, what are you playing at the present time?
The one that I have now, actually, I have two of them. And the one that I have now is a very early Mark VI that was made in 1954. And it's got a really nice sound. So I like that horn a lot. I also have another one that was made about 1958, which I've had for, oh, 35 years, a long time. I've played that for a long time, and many of my earlier recordings were done using that horn.
Of course, another important aspect of playing the horn, is the mouthpiece. So, what kind of mouthpiece, do you play? Or do you use in your instruments?
I play an old Otto Link, a vintage mouthpiece. Probably made in the mid 60s. It's marked number 10. So it's quite an open mouthpiece. And I play medium. I'm mostly playing now Laveau's ZZ number 3 reeds. So for saxophone players, maybe that means something. But actually, your mouthpiece has a big role to play in the sound that you get, as big as the horn that you play. So I thought I'd throw that in.
What was it like for you traveling to the Middle East, Rick? It sounds like a pretty exciting and adventurous moment in your life.
When I graduated from high school, I went and lived in Cairo, Egypt for a year. My father was a college professor. He was an economics professor at Portland State University. And they had an exchange program with the American University in Cairo. And as part of that, you could bring your family over. And so my dad went over to teach over there for a year. And when I finished graduating from high school in Portland, then I went over and actually attended the American University in Cairo for a year. And I was 17 when I went over. And it was very interesting. I really enjoyed being in Egypt. I kind of learned how to speak at least the street Arabic. I didn't learn how to read, but I could speak to some extent. I played in a band when I was there, and we played kind of a mix of American popular music, including, some rock tunes and some standards, as well as a few Arabic tunes and a few European popular tunes. So that was kind of a fun experience. And I just like being in Cairo and being around on the streets and being in a third world country. It was pretty cool. So I enjoyed that a lot. Since then, I've done a lot of traveling, actually, and a lot of traveling in third world countries. So maybe that kind of whetted my appetite for that kind of travel, but it was a really good experience for me. It gave me some different perspectives on how people in different places in the world look at things differently and do things differently.
Who are some of the musicians, specifically tenor sax musicians, that have influenced your musical perspective?
That's actually perhaps a larger question, because I would say I'm influenced by a lot of saxophone players, and for that matter, a lot of musicians who didn't play the saxophone. But I'll deal with the saxophone stuff first. I mean, I would say that I'm really influenced by the whole range of the history of the jazz tenor saxophone, starting out with Coleman Hawkins. And if I were to just start naming names, it would be a long list. People like Coleman Hawkins, Lester Young, Ben Webster. But I'd have to throw in Johnny Hodges too, even though he played alto, because I love Johnny Hodges playing. Bird, Charlie Parker, Dexter Gordon, Gene Ammons, and then moving into a little more modern folks, certainly John Coltrane and Sonny Rollins were significant influences on me. I like Clifford Jordan a lot, John Gilmour, Eric Dolphy, Ornette, and it goes on. There's a lot of great players today, and I listen to a wide variety of people. But that just gives you some idea of a cross section of saxophone players that I've listened to a good deal. I forgot to mention Wayne Shorter, I guess, who was certainly also an influence. Wayne Shorter, great composer as well. But I would say I was also very much influenced by composers and band leaders. So that people like Duke Ellington and Count Basie and Miles Davis as a band leader, and of course also as a soloist, I guess, Sun Ra, Ornette Coleman, John Coltrane as a band leader, not just as a saxophonist, and probably a lot of other folks. Henry Threadgill, Air, that was a great band. I don't want this list to go long too long here, but
So what you're saying is that you draw on many different sources to inspire you, like you said, including band leaders and composers, but I guess other bands as well.
the point is that I don't feel like I just have a few people who influenced me. I feel like what I do comes from many different sources, and also from sources which are not strictly jazz sources. I've listened to all different kinds of music, especially all different kinds of American popular music, and those things were big influences as well. Starting out with playing in jazz groups, starting in high school, but also playing in rock bands, country bands, lots of rhythm and blues bands. The first group I really played a lot with professionally was a blues band in Chicago. And that was a big influence on me. I played a good deal in Latin bands, and that was another influence on my music. I played with African musicians playing African music. And then in listening, all kinds of music, I think.
I think of people like Duke Ellington that thought a lot about what music was all about, and how it sort of fits into the grand scheme of things.
I pretty much go along with the Duke Ellington adage that, there's only good music and music that's not so good. I'm not so concerned with the types, but, Western classical music, Indian classical music, African music, gamelan music, music from all over the world, all these things kind of play into it. I think the music that you play comes from your experience. Part of your experience, of course, is your playing experience, and you're influenced by the people you play with, and you're also influenced by all the different things that you hear.
So, Rich, was your family musical?
I would say my dad was not very interested in music. He was mostly interested in listening to the news on the radio. My mother, excuse me, my mother was more musically inclined, but she was not terribly involved in music either. So for me, music is something that kind of came along for me as a more individual thing that I just happened to like.
One of the questions I love to ask musicians is, if they had to put together a dream band, normally aside from the band that they're already using or working with, who would it consist of?
Well, the way I would answer that is that I really don't have a dream band. I've never really thought that way. There's lots of people whose music I admire, but I've never so much thought, oh, I really want to play with so and so because that'll make the music that I want to make. I've always actually worked more off, I want to make the best music I can make with the people that I do play with. So I guess theoretically I could say, William Parker and Hamid Drake are a great rhythm section. I've heard them live numerous times, and I'm sure it would be really fun to play with them.
So at this particular point in your musical career, what is it that interests you the most?
The thing I'm most interested in musically right now is really about group improvisation and specifically what I would refer to as compositional group improvisation. And that's kind of what we do in the bands that I have, that I play in. We play really very much as a group. I mean, obviously there's lots of individual soloing and so on, but that individual improvisation really takes place within the context of trying to create a spontaneous performance that is compositional in its entirety. And I think that's really an important thing, kind of about what I'm trying to do and about what the musicians I'm playing with are trying to do. We're really listening to each other very carefully and trying to make the whole thing hang together as a performance and as a statement, as opposed to saying, okay, now I've got a solo, I'm going to play these really cool licks and so on. That's definitely not the way we're approaching it. We're approaching it as a total group thing. And when you do play in a more group-oriented situation, the most important, one of the more important things is to play with people for a while because you get a sense of how they approach things and you're able to work with them in a more seamless fashion where things flow naturally from one place to another. People do certain things, and you kind of have a sense of where they might go with that. So, again, that enables this compositional group improvisation process to happen really well, I guess.
So basically, Rich, you don't look at it from a point of view of a dream band, but more of a collaborative effort with the group.
So I guess basically I'm saying I don't really have a dream band, but I like playing with the people I'm playing with. But I'm certainly open to playing with lots of other people. And when that happens, We'll see where it goes.
Now, the various bands that you had over the years, were they project-driven, or did you really have something else in mind?
I would say, for the most part, they were not particularly project-driven. Most of the groups that I've played in have been more long-term groups where we played together over a period of years. And so they weren't generally just for some specific project.
So what would you say about the groups that you had over the years? So what really made them special? And what did all of that encompass and mean to you?
The way I would describe the groups I've had and performed with over the years is more that they reflected, of course, the musicians that were available in the area that I was in. I live in Portland, Oregon, so I'm at the very least dealing with the West Coast, and sometimes, you know, people even more locally, so that there's some ability to get together on a regular basis.
So you were looking for people, a special kind of person for your bands to play in. Is that the right assumption?
I wanted to find people who were sympathetic and would want to do the sorts of things that I wanted to do and make them happen and be people that were good to work with. And generally, you know, you get these folks, a group of these folks, and then you work over a period of time and you can explore the kinds of things that you can explore well with that particular set of personnel. That's been kind of my methodology, as opposed to I'm going to have this group that does this and I'm going to have this other group that does that. I think the other thing that's reflected in these groups is that they reflect my musical interests and concerns at that particular time.
So, Rich, how would you see yourself fitting in to the bands that you put together?
I don't tend to be a very ideologically conceptual person in the way that I write and perform music. The music that I do tends to reflect what's happening in my musical life at that point, and my life too, I guess non-musical as well, as opposed to I've come up with this idea and now I'm going to find these people that are going to realize this idea. In other words, the music comes more organically out of my life than it does out of an intellectually imposed conceptual scheme. So, you know, I've found over the years various groups of folks that I could work well with, and then we would work for fairly significant periods of time. That would be true, for example, for the Lizard Brothers, which evolved somewhat in its personnel, but was basically a larger group with 3 to 4 horns. It was a somewhat more writing-oriented group where I tended to spell things out compositionally a little bit more. Then I went into a period where I played in smaller groups primarily. I was playing a lot with a trio with Clyde Reed and Dave Storrs for a number of years. That was a very improvisation-oriented group. There was some writing, but improvisation was probably the number one operating principle. And I would say that with the quartets that I've recorded more with in recent years, especially my current working band with Michael Vlakovich, Clyde Reed, and Carson Hawley, my son, that band is also primarily improvisational, although there is certainly a good deal of writing that I do for the band as well.
So then your main concern as a band leader and a band member is to focus more on the improvisational part of it and not so much on the structural part ahead of time.
It's not a real programmed band in the sense that although there are written portions to what we do, what happens after the written portions is pretty much totally open. And so that ultimately means that 90 to 95% of what we do is completely improvised. I don't tend to write a lot of things out where I say, you do this, and then so-and-so does that. It's more, we play the tune, and then we feel what's in the air, and we follow the energy and the flow to create what we create. So it's very spontaneous. And I like that aspect. You can only do that with effectively with some people, but I feel that the folks that I'm playing with now, it works really well as a group. Everyone is a really good improviser. Everyone listens really well. And anyone in the band can move the band at any given point. They may play a certain thing and the whole band will pivot and go there, or you know, set up some other kind of a feel or approach. So it's really all about the group.
Rich, do you prefer a particular group setting when you're recording or performing live?
Probably I prefer working in small groups the most. I like to play with other people because of the group interplay. But a smaller group allows a freer improvisational give and take. So I think smaller groups allow not only some writing and some coordination, but they also allow you a pretty free improvisational feel. So that's probably the thing I've done the most, but it is fun to play in large groups at times. I do enjoy that. And I've played solo a certain amount, not a lot of gigs, but I've done a number of solo gigs. Those were quite challenging and fun to do. I wouldn't want to make that my mainstay, but it's a nice thing as a change of pace. I've played a lot of duo gigs, and I actually like playing in duo a lot. Again, you get interaction, but you're still very free. So that's kind of the way I look at that.
Does writing music come easy to you, Rich, or do you have to work at it? And do you have a particular style of writing?
It depends. Writing music at times can come really easily. Usually the music that I write comes in response to something that I just hear in my head, so to speak. I'll be walking around and all of a sudden I'll sing some little fragment and I'll think, oh, that's kind of cool. I wonder if that could be used. So then I'll write that down and then I'll work with it later and see if I can bring something out. Or sometimes I'm playing my horn and I play something and I think, that could form the basis for something else. As far as it, the whole thing coming easy or hard, sometimes it comes easy, sometimes it comes hard. It's really nice when it comes easy, but sometimes very good compositions can come from things that you have to work at quite a bit. So I would say it just depends. It's kind of a combination of many things. Sometimes the basic idea will come easily and maybe the main thrust of the thing, but there'll be one or two little problem areas that you have to struggle with a bit in order to make the whole thing come together as a whole. So that's kind of how it goes. It's really nice when it comes easy, though, I'll have to say that. Do I have a particular way of composing? Not so much. I don't usually do this intellectually, again, although sometimes I think about what kinds of things do I want to write. But many times I just start with a few phrases or an idea for a groove or a melodic fragment. Excuse me, something like that. So again, the answer is it depends. It's kind of an organic process. And I don't follow any particular specific formatted process.
You know, Rich, I get the impression that Oregon is a hotbed of jazz. I think there's a lot of activity there. Many, many groups getting together, many musicians really making viable statements. What are your comments on this?
There are some very good musicians in Oregon, I would definitely say. I think the answer to the question is really that anything outside of New York and Chicago in the U.S. probably doesn't get the recognition that it deserves. I think the whole West Coast, more specifically, since I know a little bit more about that, but I think that musicians on the West Coast have a much harder time getting coverage than people who live in New York or near New York, and I think Chicago people also have a little easier time getting coverage. I think it's just a lack of proximity to the people who review things. When you play gigs, the critics who do most of the writing in the national jazz press are not located where you live if you're in these other locations, and they're simply not as familiar with what you're doing. So, yeah, I think it's harder, and I do think there are many good musicians in many other locations who would probably get more recognition if they were in the main centers. But then, of course, you have to live in the main center. And although I used to live in Chicago, I did for a couple of years when I was 20, 21 years of age, 19, 20. Anyhow, and that was a very good experience for me, but I don't think I want to live in either New York or Chicago at this point in my life. So I'm going to kind of stick with being here on the West Coast and doing what I do. I really love being able to get out in the outdoors and do other things in addition to playing music. So I like the West and I like the mountains and all that. So even if it's more difficult to get coverage, I'm going to stick with where I am and try to make the music happen from here.